This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 351. Currently in Denver at Comedy Works. Denver's nice. Well, except for the fact that there was a snowstorm on May 1st. But then the next day it was gorgeous. Lovely bipolar weather in Denver. But Comedy Works is fun, and next week I'll be at Helium in Portland. The date of that will be, May 9th, 10th, and 11th, 2013, Helium, Portland. And then after that, London at the Leicester Square Theater on the 15th. And then after that, I will be in D.C. and Baltimore on the 24th and 25th. So, nerdist.com/calendar. Oh, I think I'm actually coming back to Philly in June, too. And then Wise Guys in Utah. And then some dates in the fall. So, nerdist.com/calendar. Please go to the site, check out the dates, get tickets, come to shows, and enjoy some comedy and some hugs and some handshakes and whatever you want that is legal and doesn't require an overwhelming amount of nudity. Hey, you probably heard a couple days ago, Maron was on the podcast, and he, among other things, is talking about his show, Maron, which is premiering on IFC on Friday, which is the day this podcast comes out, May 3rd, 10 p.m., 9 Central. The show's fantastic. I've seen the first three episodes. You should totally watch it, and you should totally support amazing, great comics and amazing podcasters branching off and crossing over. The show, it's like, it's a semi-fictionalized account of Mark's life, but it is the WTF podcast, and he does have guests on. Judd Hirsch plays his dad, which is awesome. Adam Scott's gonna be on, and Gina Gershon, and then Dave Foley's actually in tonight's episode, the premiere episode, where we talked a bunch about trolls when Mark was on the podcast, because we're sensitive comics and that's what we deal with. And there's a great, sort of a great troll story from Mark's life that he sort of adapted for the show. So that is the first episode, May 3rd, 10 p.m., 9 Central on IFC. And Mark created the show, produced the show, and stars in the show. So support it. Support good comedy. Now, this is the long-awaited Rooster Teeth podcast. When we went, we explained this in the actual podcast, but just in a quick nutshell, so you can hear it shorter and then longer. I had Rooster Teeth on the podcast when we went down to South by Southwest. We did not record it. It was recorded for us. And there was a crazy audio issue, and it was completely unusable, and I was heartbroken. But fortunately, I went back to Austin for the Moon Tower Comedy Festival and was like, guys, please, I'm sorry. You understand the technical stuff that happens sometimes. You've been making films for the better part of 13 years. And they said, no problem. So I actually went to the Rooster Teeth compound and recorded it there, and it's Joel and Bernie and Gus, and I love those guys. They did our bowling show. We bowled Team Nerdist versus Team Rooster Teeth, but really innovative guys, and have been so far ahead of where media is now. Like, they were a decade ahead of it. So I'm really glad that they're doing as well as they're doing now, and they're doing a ton of amazing stuff. You should check out Rooster Teeth on YouTube. Check out roosterteeth.com. Okay. This is not fair. I'm talking about this episode of the podcast, and you're showing me pictures of a woman who has shoved what can only be described as a bouquet of Sharpies.
Sorry,
Into her butt.
Should we go into the next roll with Sharpies up her butthole?
No. Oh, that's a thing?
It's a website. Roll 34.
Nice Tumblr. Nerds Podcast number 351 with Rooster Teeth.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
All right, we're here in the Rooster Teeth compound.
You sound so serious.
I'm very serious because...
Seriously.
Some things happened, which is... And literally every day, tweets, when's the Rooster Teeth podcast going to go up? And I can't respond to all of them because I can't, in 140 characters, explain that during South by Southwest, we did a live podcast. SoundCloud came to us and said, hey, do you guys want to do a live podcast? And we said, sure. So we all did this live podcast at this little boathouse kind of a venue.
Good description.
During South. That's really all it was, wasn't it? It was like a snazzy hipster boathouse. And got the audio file. And my assistant, Monica, said, before you listen to this, I'm just preparing you. It doesn't sound great. I'm like, what are you talking? Because I thought the show was really fun. We had a blast. We did a lot of bits.
All right, now don't oversell it because we've gone forever.
Now that no one could listen to it, it was the funniest thing
I was funny for once. It was like
you were 10 funny. Minutes.
We met this weird drunk Australian girl we got a whole storyline from her.
Right. We launched her career.
I would have if the podcast had gone up. But what happened was when I listened to the audio file, I was like, well, maybe we can save the audio. And it sounded like we were in another room, and then Gus, you figured out
apparently the audio input on the software was set incorrectly, so instead of getting audio off the mixer, we're getting audio off of the onboard microphone
on the laptop. it was a completely independent audio guy that just, you know, it was during South By, so he was... There was a reason that he was available, but anyway, so that podcast was completely ruined, and there were so many wonderful things. Do you remember the show we came up with, Daft Punk'd, where we were just going to dress up, we were just going to tweet that Daft Punk was appearing somewhere and then show up in helmets and just play their music because no one would know the difference?
We almost have to set that up, though, because there was a huge rumor during South by Southwest, which is an interactive festival, a film festival, and a music festival. There was a big rumor that Daft Punk was just going to show up.
And every year there's always these rumors.
Right.
So, at the Capitol building.
At the Capitol, and they were going to play a concert on the steps of the Capitol building. And then as time went on and we got closer to it, everyone was realizing, oh, this is just a rumor and it's not going to happen. And I said, how hard would it be to get Daft Punk helmets and just show up with an MP3 player and put on a Daft Punk show?
Yes.
Just walk down Congress.
And I said, that's a show and we call it Daft Punked.
You took it to the next level.
And we should, because your theory was that with our combined Twitter followings, if you and I just said, hey, I heard Daft Punk. Hey, I heard that too, Bernie. And then all of a sudden, someone with the runaway train of momentum that is the internet, where people don't do any research, that would be a thing. And that no one would know the difference because they don't play instruments and they just show up in bike and biker helmets. And why couldn't we be them?
Why not? And everyone would have a great time.
Why can't there be regional Daft Punks like Gallagher?
We just be like the Blue Man Group.
Yes!
I mean, who knows, right?
And honestly, who loses in that scenario except for Daft Punk's reputation?
That's it.
Like, well, boy, Daft Punk put some weight on. What happened?
They're really letting themselves go lately.
The original Daft Punk are living like kings in Patagonia. It's the name that inspires fear.
I would mainly want to do it just to see how Daft Punk would react to it. Like, they say, everyone seemed to like this a lot.
Or would they acknowledge it? Or would it be like, oh shit, we got another group that figured it out? Like, there's a club.
What if we find out Daft Punk's been dead for years? Like the Dread Pirate Robinson.
That's what I'm saying, yes. There's a Weekend at Bernie's component where they come to life when the music's playing, but then otherwise they're corpses. I think it would be fun to mix it up. And if we did start showing up places as Daft Punk, we could do weird things like team juggling during that, no, just stuff that people wouldn't normally expect from Daft Punk.
We're performancing out.
Yes.
Some new performance art.
I see a lot of places where Daft Punk has really dropped the ball, that they could really grow.
Yeah. You could sell sponsorships on the LED masks that go by. We could help them go to the next
Miller's
level.
Bail Bonds. Like boxers.
It could be like NASCAR uniforms.
There's a spider attacking your face right now. Oh, you got him.
Oh. That's weird.
It's okay. It was a text spider.
Yeah, you're now Spider-Man.
Oh my God, you guys.
It's probably a
this is really
punk.
Weird. Now I have a six-pack, and I'm super ripped like spiders are.
But we do keep uranium in the other room, so this would explain a lot.
Where the hell did that come from?
I don't know. I was like, is that a spider?
That's weird. It's a good thing I'm not horribly arachnophobic, because this podcast would have gone from fun and upbeat to
oh,
Chris having a horrible phobic meltdown.
Jesus fucking Christ!
We had to find something to replace the audio mishap that took place in the first one, so just to keep our track on record.
It's a comedy spider that we throw into different places. That's what Daft Punk needs. We could throw spiders into their helmets, and then they would have to like whip them off.
Yeah, exactly.
Does anyone have any idea who they are, or is it like a Banksy?
I think they've had like pictures of Kiss back in the day where they had a photo of them. I think I've seen things.
How could the internet not have some sort of picture of who Daft Punk was?
There must be.
There must be.
It's like the Stig from
You've got the internet.
To the internet. Let me find out.
Yeah, you can find out.
Turn off Google Safe Search. Here we go. Daft Punk.
Maybe they're Banksy.
Unmasked.
Maybe there was a prank a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, that people said Banksy got arrested.
Pranksy?
Yeah, Pranksy. And then it's like, oh no, it was not Banksy.
I keep hearing that it's a collective.
Gentlemen, there is Daft Punk.
Oh, that wasn't that hard.
Chris, for your podcast, like when you talk about things, do you put up like a set of links or anything like that?
That would be a good thing to do, but we as yet have not done that. So I would just put it in the hands of the gentle podcast listener to just Google Daft Punk Unmasked.
Yeah,
there you go, and there they are. But I feel like we could approximate those guys. They're white guys.
White guys look fine.
Like white guys.
We need a tight leather jacket and a women's small polo shirt, and we're good.
I'm sure we can find those in Austin somewhere. I'm sure there are stores that just sell those two items.
We're gonna do Daft Punk, but we're gonna do it unplugged. So instead of playing music, we'll just show up and put microphones up to the helmets and just go.
Sing along, you know it.
It's a call and response.
I mean, you just need to find that sort of point that the audience is like they're not sure. Like there's that. They really are. Wait a minute. There's no music cutting in.
The weirder you are with it, the more they'll accept it. But you have to commit to the weirdness, and then people think it's genius.
Chris, I like the live performance album for Daft Punk. I like the episode. Like, give it microphone to the audience, like, where, and you go,
it's the acoustic version.
It is, yeah, it's unplugged. It's Daft Punk unplugged.
Yeah, we totally bring that back.
Everybody's just singing along.
This is off our first record. Most people don't know it.
Would every song just end up sounding the same when performed unplugged? It's like, this is the wah-wah song, not the wah-wah song.
It's literally the only way to do it.
We can just add a drum beat to our original podcast and release that as one of the songs.
All right. Now, we should point out Daft Punk does have a new album out, right? They just dropped something new. Right?
Yeah, I think that's what the people got confused about the rumor. I think in March that they just released an album.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But everyone somehow misinterpreted that to mean that they're going to have a show at the Capitol, which is like totally unplausible. Do you really think the state of Texas government would allow Daft Punk to do a show at the fucking Capitol?
No, with like people on ecstasy hanging off the fucking statues, yeah. Like the war statues.
And with no like pre-public permits or anything like that. No record or anything. They're just going to show up and do it.
What is Austin in the style of Keep It Weird, which I feel like there's a weird Keep It Weird back and forth with Portland.
Yeah, you know, they have the exact same shirts in Portland? Yeah. They have that same slogan.
Yeah, keep Portland weird.
So now is there like some sort of argument as to who came up with the weird?
No, there's no argument. Austin came up with it first. But Portland has it also.
Keep it weird.
That slogan is so old in Austin that I remember the variations of it like in the 90s when the internet was getting big, and it was keep Austin wired. Ooh, that was subversive.
Oh. Wow.
Maybe it was just like a dyslexic typesetter. My favorite, genius.
My favorite is the East Austin, where all the hipsters are. They have a slogan now, which is keep East Austin shitty.
I live in East Austin,
and they're doing a good. You guys are doing a good job of it.
It's partly shitty. You can't improve your house too much.
What I noticed from spending a lot of times in domestic airports is that there are regional T-shirts that will have you believe that that is a thing in that city. So, like, okay, so in PDX and ATX, you have keep that city weird, but then you get into Ohio and like the Midwest, and you see you'll see a green T-shirt, and it says nothing tips like a cow, and then there's a an outline of the state, of whichever state you're in. So that's a weird recurring one too.
Weird.
That is weird. Is there like one company that like manufactures
they
t-shirts?
Assign, they assign a regional vibe.
Do you think they get like the wrong state shirt? You know, like Ohio's gets sent to Indiana and they're like, fuck.
Oh, man.
Sell it anyway.
Now no one's going to know the difference between our states.
Mike, can I also back up a little bit and say that just writing the words keep Austin weird is not that weird. Like, you need to have a picture of like a birthday clown cutting himself.
No, I agree.
I would say like an imprint of Goatsy or something.
That would be weird. Yeah.
Or it's a shirt, but it's actually like it's actually shorts, but you wear it like a shirt. There's slits in there where the pockets are. That would be weird.
That would be weird.
That would be very weird to wear short shirts.
We should
make merchandise.
For these people.
I should.
You should.
There's another town nearby, Bryan College Station is where Texas A&M is, which is like the big rival school for University of Texas. And in over there, their shirts say, keep College Station normal.
They went the other direction. They take it one step the other way.
Austin is very, very, very different from the rest of Texas. I mean, I just took a road trip all the way from San Francisco to Austin. My girlfriend moved to Austin. And so we went from San Francisco to Flagstaff.
Oh, yeah.
To Lubbock to Austin. So the trip between Lubbock and Austin, we stopped at like some small place called Coleman, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to this really cool like town square drugstore. That's a drugstore / soda jerk. You know, they have like a grill in the back. It was awesome with like, you know, the bar and stools and all that. As soon as we walked
separate
in,
separate entrance for African Americans.
Exactly.
Separate but equal.
But they asked us as soon as we walked in, they go, so are you guys going from Lubbock to Austin or Austin to Lubbock?
As soon as we walked in.
Maybe that's all they get.
They know what their place is in the geography of it.
Yeah.
Like, well,
they knew we were from Austin in some capacity.
Like, Austin, huh? So you want like a Bob Marley shake? Wink.
Keep it weed.
They know. That should be the title release.
Yeah, and a fucking with like the Rastafarian colors.
Yeah,
keep it weed.
See, I'm an evil bad person probably.
Uh-huh.
And so Austin is doing this thing. I don't know if like a lot, I'm sure a lot of other cities are doing it now where it's like get rid of the bags. Like you can't get bags now.
Oh, the bag ban.
Which is weird to me and a huge pain in the ass. And this is where I'd like to just not be weird. I'd like to just be normal.
I'd like to go to the grocery store,
buy groceries, just get bags.
Handpick your weirdness. It doesn't have to be weirdness across the board.
I was in Vegas for a show a couple weeks ago, and I went to the CVS, to the drugstore, to buy a razor so I could shave while I was there. And, you know, they still have plastic bags there, so just because I couldn't get them in Austin, I got two plastic bags for my shaver, just like, yeah.
Do they confiscate those? Like, it's like, because if you enter California, if you bring produce in, like if you have oranges,
they
take them away
when
you're going in because, you know, they don't want to disrupt the ecosystem and bring in fruit flies or whatever. So maybe they would do the same thing at the Austin.
You're like, I swear, officer, I don't know where it came from. It's not mine.
Son, you carry any plastic bags in the trunk?
Here's a that illustrates the difference between Austin and the rest of Texas. Is that Texas, the city, came up with the ban to ban those plastic bags. So everywhere you go in Austin now, you can't get those plastic bags. But the state legislature, which is in Austin, the state legislature for Texas, is now trying to pass a ban on the ban. To repeal the ban.
Oh, how about a little double negative?
It's a plastic bag ban.
The chair recognizes the fact that two negatives equal a positive. This is a simple mathematics.
I think that's the soda jerk. That's too complex for Texas. Mathematics, you've lost them.
Then there's a Minecraft DC, Washington, D.C.
So
thing.
This is a weird thing. You guys know who Steve Dengler is? He's the guy who founded, he's a guy from the .com era. He founded XE.com,
okay,
which is that financial exchange site.
I use it every day.
That's what his, it's a funny thing, is that it's XE.com. It's where you go to like get current currency transactions, or what is
it's
it?
Like, you want to know how much
conversions, currency conversions.
How much is a pound worth right now?
Exactly.
How much is a euro worth
at
this moment?
Right.
Yeah, but now.
Yeah, yeah, now. Refresh.
It even gives you, I think when you pull it up, doesn't it give you a countdown? No, like, this is good for 30 seconds.
And then it auto-refreshes if you don't navigate away.
Got it.
It knows what you're there for. It knows you're there for currency porn. But it's like...
let's see that inflation, baby.
And when I met him, I said, oh, I use your site all the time. And he hands me his business card, and it literally says on his business card, hey, I use your site all the time. Apparently, people tell him this all the time. And but what he does is, because he's run that site for such a long time and hasn't sold it or anything, what he does is he supports a lot of really cool stuff like that you and I would love, Chris. Like he's working on the Torment Kickstarter right now. I think they have the $4 million.
Jesus,
nice.
Yeah, and he like supports like a lot of he did Save the Supers. Mm-hmm. He supported that as a web series. Like he invests in a lot of web series because he likes internet stuff. Well, he tweeted this photo just recently of, it's a Washington D.C. shirt. It says Washington D.C. Imagine a world, and it's just Minecraft. Like the city of D.C. is using these Minecraft images.
Yeah, it's got like the Capitol and a couple of D.C. landmarks, and then it's Steve and the Wolf.
I do want to point out that there's nothing particularly Minecrafty about the buildings. They're just the regular buildings in the Lincoln Monument.
Well, I'm sure they're made out of stone blocks.
Okay, of course.
But I thought you guys were talking about that. I thought, here's an example of just like they use Minecraft
images. Is that even licensed? I mean,
I'm sure it's not.
That is kind of a lazy mashup where they just put a little Minecraft character in front of a thing that they actually want to promote.
I think that's like the promotional art they use for the 360 version of Minecraft. Like when you go to buy it on Xbox
Live.
It
literally looks like the cover of the game, just with the background cut out.
They took the background out and put like the Lincoln Memorial.
Wow.
I don't know what message. What are they trying to say?
It even says, I'm not sure what this is supposed to mean. That's what his tweet says.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's just funny how people will just take something that's well known, put it on a T-shirt, and then regionally assign it to some kind of
value. It's a
mashup. You wouldn't get it.
I often think of Washington D.C. every time I go to play Minecraft.
Absolutely, I'm building a better future through Pixel.
You do not want to be in D.C. after dark. I know that. So I'm sure that maybe there's a connection of some sort.
This is this is very troubling to me. I don't know why.
You travel a ton.
Oh my God, so much. I mean, I haven't been home for almost a month.
Well, to put this in perspective, you were in Austin last month. You were here in March, and you're back again. Like us kind of, you know, nerfing this podcast that we had wasn't a big deal because you're like, oh, I'm going to be back in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Exactly, which was great. It worked out well because the Moon Tower Comedy Festival is going on right now. But yeah, I mean, even just in the last 2 weeks, I was in New York a couple times and then performed there, and then Madison, Wisconsin, and then two different colleges in Pennsylvania, and then here. Then I'm going to Denver, Portland, London, Scotland, D.C., and Baltimore.
So where are you going to Scotland?
Wow.
we're just going on vacation. But I'm doing two shows in London because, of course, while I was there, like, well, if I'm there, I mean, when am I going to be back in London anytime soon? I should, you know. I'm curious to see if the podcast will drive, because nothing else I do airs in London. So I'm curious to see if the podcast will get people to come see a live show.
I'm sure it will.
I don't know. We'll see.
When you say anything else, you're talking about, like, Talking Dead?
Nothing that I do airs in England unless you torrent it. So, because of geo-blocking.
Nobody does that. Torrents thing.
I know. So
That was actually a discussion. We have a show called Immersion, and it's right now in development at the TV network. And so it's kind of thing you normally, like, they want you to keep on the down low, but we don't care. You know, we talk with our audience about these things, and we were saying, you know, we're trying to weigh the, you know, advantages of going to TV or staying on the web with the second season of the show. And it was our international audience that immediately pointed out to us, we're not going to be able to see this. You know, we love the first season of Immersion, and here we are in, you know, the UK and Australia and even Canada. We might not be able to watch the show. So I'm glad they pointed that out to us. It's like something I hadn't considered.
So then what does that mean?
They all have to move to America.
Yeah, really.
Come on, just give it up.
Come on.
What it really means is that, honestly, what at the end of the day, it means that we can make to the network a really strong case for having a strong web presence for the show.
Sure.
If and when it goes on the
air. Well, I don't know why anyone – I feel like when you talk about, you know, one platform over the other, I don't know why there's even a – discussion. Like, no, it should be, you shouldn't just pick one over the other, you should combine and try to do some for one and then connect it to stuff for another platform. I don't know why some TV
seems like that's where it's going with
of course.
Yeah,
well, you hit it. I mean, it's usually the TV network that goes no.
Right.
I mean, we had even for Red versus Blue, there were times when we were talking about putting Red versus Blue on the air, and then what would happen with the web version of it. And they said, well, you just move it over to our TV network site. It's like, your TV network site is like a tenth of the size of our website. It's like, why not keep it in one place? And
I think what a lot of the bigger companies haven't figured out yet is that web video is a crowdsourced platform, and it relies on being shared, and no one shares proprietary player content like on their websites, where they're like, we're gonna corner all the traffic on our website, oh no, we got a hundredth of the views.
What's going wrong? Or what did you do wrong?
If it does get popular, the site stops working. We weren't planning for this much traffic.
They don't really, you know, those little players that you see that, you know, that companies just try to wall off from everything else, they're not as functional as you would want them to be.
No, they're an afterthought, typically. I mean, they're not going to make a web destination that really does legitimately compete with their channel destination. They're probably just not going to do that. If they're catching up, you know, and some of the people are a little more ahead.
Reality is going to break through at some point or another, where they're going to look at it differently, probably.
But it's also frustrating, too, because when I talk to people in other, like, when I see people complaining about, like, in their... They're international, you know. From our relative perspective here in America, people in Canada or people in the UK, and they get upset about something being "quote unquote" blocked. They think that like Sony just or whoever, you know, doesn't want to show that content to them in that country. But it really has more to do with the distributors in their country blocking it, so that like they have a fair share, like showing it and making the deal. Like, we paid so much for the show, we want to show it here in the UK. Mm-hmm. We can't have YouTube and the American distribution systems invading like through some other vector and getting
right.
So a lot of people think it's like the American companies, like, just I guess being dicks and not wanting to show it there. It's not at all the case. It's usually a local company or you know, in your country that's blocking them.
I've also seen people tweet them because I have nothing to do with it.
I've also seen people get upset. They're like, I can't watch this video game trailer in my country. And as dumb as it sounds, it's like it's a ratings board thing. Like, you don't have ESRB in your country. Like, it has to have a PEGI rating instead. So it's like, no one wants to stop you from watching this. It's like a watchdog group that wants to make sure you know how old you have to be.
Australia historically had a huge problem with that because they would really hammer down on violent games. You know, the U.S. is so different from everywhere else in the
Germany,
world.
Too, right? They're real restrictive about what they can show.
Especially Nazi stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. We won't show tits, but we'll show like brutal murders. And then over there, they won't show the brutal murders, but they're fine with tits. Like, it's a weird.
Yeah.
We're backwards.
We're totally backwards. Tits are natural.
Let's get the best of both worlds.
Murder tits.
Murder tits.
Game
coming
of Thrones.
Soon.
Yeah.
That's what Game of Thrones is. Murder tits.
Murder tits.
You guys going to watch Murder Tits this Sunday?
God, season 3 of Murder Tits has been unbelievable.
So good. So many dragons and murder tits.
How has nobody else figured out the recipe of show someone naked or somebody dying every 5 minutes you have a hit? That's all there is to it.
Murder, I mean, there's tits. A lot of the, in that genre of like Game of Thrones and that sort of like people writing books in that style, there's a huge supply of those books, isn't there? From
absolutely.
How is there not, like, how are all of those books not in pre-production at this point?
I don't know. I mean, I would imagine.
It seems like it's a formula that does work pretty well. I don't know.
I love Game of Thrones, although the first season, you and I was like, do people need to be naked in the background there? Like, there was no
it's just like, we're HBO.
I'm sorry.
How American of you.
We're gonna make sure that you know this is HBO. You know, that's fine.
You know what the most horrifying example of that backwardness that I've ever heard in my life was I don't know the name of the game. I'll try to look it up here. There was a game that showed at E3 this year, and it was like some kind of alien abduction game where you wake up on a ship and you're fighting your way out after being abducted, and you get out of the pod or whatever. And in one of the levels, when you're going through, there's other abductees who are like pinned to the wall with mucus or something like that. Yeah. You know, they're trapped
always,
as well.
Always with the mucus.
And they were naked. And because they were naked, they couldn't show it on the floor of E3. So the way they got around the nudity was to mutilate the bodies.
Oh.
Yeah. Isn't that, like, that is backwards.
That's the typical American answer,
what?
Right?
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute. Those aren't alive tits, are they? Yeah. If they're dead tits, it's fine.
Just cover them with blood.
If they're murdered tits,
then
they're okay.
Then it's totally fine.
Or like the males, if you can cut the torso off at about the abdomen and don't show anything below that, like just literally cut the body off.
Let's get some more guts dangling there.
I gotta find
let's
the
get
name
one that
of the
looks
game.
Like a dick.
Oh my God.
Can you cover up his dick with his guts?
Oh my God.
We call that biological. Blurry.
Put some mucus and guts on that dick and it's fine.
As long as it's
Isn't that horrible?
Yeah. Isn't that really horrible? It really is. That must have been a
and
fun
And the fucking
meeting.
Ridiculous thing about it is that we're, this isn't even hyperbole. Like, this is just how it actually works.
I haven't heard that. That's fucking ridiculous, man. That's absolutely crazy.
E3's
coming up again. God, like,
it just feels like...
a month and a half.
I know. Oh, my God. I was so... I've had it a little bit of an emotional, but it's all okay. Gaming, couple of days, you know, finding out that Bethesda's not going to do any more DLC for Skyrim.
Oh yeah,
I spent a year and a half with that game.
One thing we talked about in the podcast we lost,
Unfamiliar Cum?
Your stone, no, not that. Our band name, the Stones of Benazir.
Stones of Berenziah.
That's it. I got them all.
No! Yeah. That's not fair! I have one left! And it's in the fucking Dark Brotherhood, and the Dark Brotherhood has collapsed, and there's a bug that if you try to go in the Dark Brotherhood, then the fucking game freezes.
I got it there, though. Are you playing on PC? Or
no, I'm playing it on... So I can't even, like, download a mod to fix it. I was playing it on Xbox.
That is the most frustrating thing in the world. When you come out, it's like, now I gotta start over.
I think Bernie did that.
Yeah. I did it. So, but I get it right after they put out a 1.9 patch, and I. So you might be able to go in there and get it now.
I don't know.
They just passed it. There's feel hope for you, Chris.
I don't know if there is hope, because now it's over. My Dark Elf Mage, Gene Wilder, is just going to be done. It's going to be done. But I started playing Bioshock Infinite, which is fucking great.
I just finished 100%. We had an achievement race here at the company for that. I did it with my girlfriend, where we raced to get 100% of the achievements in that game. And one of the last achievements is how? To beat the game on 1999 mode, which was like miserable.
I had to watch Bernie do this. I'd be like, oh my God. Like, is every level like this? It's like take two steps. Die. You know, take two steps. Like, you take those two steps for 3 hours.
How are you in a competition with your girlfriend over achievements, and you're still in that relationship? How is that possible?
It was
like
close.
That's the last achievement is, I'm not broken up.
Well, it helps if your girlfriend is a professional gamer or has gamed professionally.
That
yeah, that helps a bunch.
I missed, like, two... I think I missed maybe one kinetoscope, and I know where I know where it was.
Yeah.
But by the time I figured that out, I couldn't go back without.
Yeah.
And so I was like, maybe they'll give me a chance. And they do. There are some that they'll give you a chance later in the game to catch up on, but not the one.
When you replay the chapter, just pick it up.
What?
Yeah. Once you get them all, finish the game, and then just go back, play that chapter. Your totals carry through from one run through to the next.
Oh,
it's really well done.
That makes me happy. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's really well done.
When you get a game, do you go and look through the achievements? Like, is the first thing like, here's the achievements, so I want to hit those?
No, but it seems pretty obvious with this game in particular. Like, that's going to be a thing because it gives you the read. It's like, sightseeing or 1 of 37 or whatever.
I don't do that either. Do you do that?
No, I don't care.
Do you, Bernie?
Do I get all the collectibles?
No. Like, in the beginning, you get a game. It's like, okay, I'm going to go and look at the achievements and see what the achievements are, and then I'm going to play the game.
Yeah, well, I have to. If I'm in a race, yeah.
Well, otherwise. Just generally.
But I always feel like that's the second pass, isn't it? So you do first pass to finish the game, second pass for achievements.
That's what I do. That's what I do, too.
Yeah. I'd say something I've gotten better at doing. Now that I have less time to play games, I have no shame about playing a game through the first time on easy.
Right.
And just blowing through it just so I can, like, experience it. Like, Bioshock Infinite... is people love that story. I mean, that's all anybody seems to talk about is how much they love the story. And to go through it on easy over the course of a week, you know, in as much time as I have to play games, is a lot better than playing on hard on the first playthrough.
It gives you a huge advantage.
And taking like 2 or 3 weeks and going, what was this? Who's this guy?
Right, you know? Yeah. Right. No, I love it. I mean, I honestly just wander around the game and just look at the fucking detail of... You know, every book has a title on it and everything, and it's just so gorgeous to look at.
Yeah, we did a location shoot out in the suburbs of Atlanta in this tiny town with 7,000 people. So I was out there for like a week, and I took my Xbox, and I just played Bioshock Infinite the whole time.
Did you take your Xbox or did you take the games case?
I just took my Xbox. I didn't have the games case yet, so I just took my Xbox.
Would you have taken the games case?
Yeah, if I had it.
We had a shoot for Immersion where we went out to a racetrack in Atlanta, and it was like I had not yet finished the game. I was in this achievement race for Bioshock. So between...
Did you bet anything, by the way?
Yeah, we had bets.
What were they?
Oh, just... Let's keep that to ourselves. Like Tom Hanks in Private... Same Private Ryan. Some things are just for me. I think the prize was, if I look back, it was one of us... whoever won would get free blowjobs for life, I think is what it was.
Oh, nice.
So,
that's a fair bet.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I did end up winning, but I only beat her by, like, I think 15 total points.
Now,
like,
wait a minute. Barely... I do want to kind of go back, and maybe this is just a... maybe I'm dissecting too much, but... Why specify free blowjobs?
That's sort of a weird.
Free blowjobs for life.
Crabs on demand.
It's like
better.
The Carvel gold card.
Is it, you have to show like your gamer card. Like, I believe this is, I can redeem this right
it's
now.
Like, it's like Baron Munchausen. As many blowjobs as the strongest man can carry. Like,
I'm not sure, but you might be doing relationship
I feel like
wrong.
I just lost the bet just now. Somehow, a month later,
we feel like we just won.
And then your whatever your coupon's just going to be torn in half and placed on your billion.
No, my membership card.
No. All the glitter has been scraped off of it. No, we didn't make a bet this time. We were just doing it for, you know, for fun. There's no official bet. We got one time where to launch our YouTube show, Achievement Hunter. It's even hard to call Achievement Hunter a show. It's more like a big brand now. But to do that one, I had a $1,000 bet with Jeff for achievements. Oh. I bet him he couldn't get 10,000 points, achievement points, gamer score, in a week.
And that was a brutal game.
Dude. No, that was, you're talking about Modern Warfare. That was the first one we did.
Before that.
This is the one where I bet him $1,000 he couldn't get 10,000 gamer score in 1 week. He did it in 3.5 days.
Oh, right. So you had to give him $1,000.
I did. So.
Money well spent.
For life. He had like an Excel spreadsheet of like, okay, Madden, here are all the easy achievements. Like he had a clip.
The craziest to me, you're talking about Excel spreadsheets, is the fucking Excel spreadsheets you guys had for goddamn Viva Pinata.
Viva Pinata.
These guys were like, oh, I got to get a... what the fuck is a Limosaurus?
Limosaurus.
Game never made sense to me. I even tried. I tried to play it. Do you know what I'm talking about, this
no.
game?
It's like it's a piñata fucking simulator.
It's like
that's
there's
all
like,
it is what it sounds like.
It's like candy animals, okay, and you're trying to make the candy animals have sex with each other
it's
to make
so
more
great.
Candy animals.
They're dancing
and there's sex
and there's spreadsheets. There are some
sex.
There is absolutely
animals.
Sex.
Is there you candy animal penetration?
You don't make that game better. It's blood. Like I'll just cover all the animals in blood. That would have made the game a lot better
and more acceptable.
And it's a kid's
Chris. How do you think they get filled with candy?
He fills her with candy.
You just candy spray everywhere. No,
ooh, my nougat.
She's like, I thought you had a wrapper on that.
Hey, don't gum inside me. Come on, guys. Come on. Yeah, here we go. Here it is. It's the Rooster Teeth comedy. Come on.
But I do have to say, Viva Pinata is probably one of the most underrated franchises on the Xbox.
All right,
shitty stuff. No offense to people who work very hard on those games, I'm sure. There's like some side titles, like racing cart titles. The pure Viva games are great.
One time I went to the store. I was like, all right, fuck it. These guys talk about Viva Pinata forever. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to try to play it. I went, bought it, got home, put the game in. I was like, wow, this game is nothing like I was expecting. There's like a racing game or something.
Oh, yeah,
I played it for like 30 minutes and I ejected the disc from my Xbox. Like, the wrong fucking game was in the case.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck is this?
Did you think you bought it new?
Yeah, I had to go back to GameStop and I was like, what is this?
What in the hell?
Like, oh, we must have put the wrong game in there. I was like, this is new. It shouldn't be open.
You're lucky they believed you.
Yeah, I was like... I could not believe that the wrong game was in the fucking case.
But you didn't enjoy the game that you ended up playing?
No. I did not. I did not end up. It was too much pinata sex, not enough.
I didn't get it.
I can't believe you're saying there's no sex in it.
There's no sex. It's dancing. They dance.
Dance quotes.
You run the pinata through a maze to where the other pinata is waiting.
You're essentially
a little heart, like the beginning of Love Boat, comes up.
You're essentially running sperm through a maze to get to an egg.
Oh.
Come on.
No, it's all metaphors. There's on screen, there's nothing but dancing pinatas. In fact, I heard that one point that I always heard rumors there was that like you can name your pinatas, and there was concern that you could name like this pinata Bill and this pinata Steve, mm-hmm. and Bill and Steve could dance together, and they were worried about getting some negative feedback. So
that's really funny because that really sort of how long? I mean, that it's funny because you think about Mass Effect 3 now and where we're at now versus where we were, and that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, that dancing is way more explicit.
Dancing is way more explicit than Mass Effect 3. Like, so, I'm going through and playing Mass Effect 3, and there's like a dude, and he's like, "Hey, let's hang out. Hey, let's hang out." I'm like, "No, I'm fine."
I think it's important for the game industry to throw the news media industry a bone every now and then. You know that they have
right.
like, "Oh my
right.
god,
yeah.
outrage,
yeah. outrage."
Yeah.
When would you guys? Did you say? Did we talk about? We talked about this a little bit on the. That's the other problem with doing a live podcast. Sometimes is that it. What I did find with the live show that we did is that we did so much, kind of like playing to the audience. But I really did want to hear more about you as an organization and when you started. And I know you started pre You started like before most people had. You started years before YouTube,
right?
Back in our day, let me tell you how it was.
I mean, like probably like 5 or 6 years before YouTube, right? Like 99, 2000, maybe.
Well, we started the first video we ever put up online, because that's Rooster Teeth is mainly an online video company. The first video we put online was 2002.
Okay,
that was the trailer to Red versus Blue. But we had worked on like blogs. They weren't called blogs back then. They were called Everything Nothing sites.
EN sites.
EN sites. And Gus had one called Drunk Gamers. A guy that we've worked with forever, Jeff, he had a site called Kill Poetry. And so we were just doing all these articles. But the one we all worked on together was Drunk Gamers. And we would get drunk and play video games and do reviews of games that way. It was more like in keeping with the times where it was a game review site. Mm-hmm. And we would review games with scores and stuff like
that. We decided it would be easy to do a site with the two things we loved.
Drinking and playing games. And the business model of that site was to get free video games, and we got none.
No, we got one.
We got one.
We got Blinks the Time Sweeper, which is a game about a time-traveling cat with a vacuum strapped to his back. We gave it a 10 out of 10. Perfect score. Best game ever made.
The whole review was about how they gave it to us for free. That was the entire review. And I was the Xbox guy for that site. And because I'm Bernie, by the way, and because I was the Xbox guy the first year the Xbox came out, all anybody cared about was Halo, Halo, Halo. That's all anybody wanted to know about was Halo. And so I was a filmmaking guy from back in college, and I had a bunch of film equipment laying around where I could digitize video, and I started using that to digitize gameplay footage, which was at the time. Nobody was doing this. This is, like you said, this is 4 years before YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was making a bunch of Halo videos, how to like drive the Warthog faster, how to get off a cliff, how to get shots on people a lot easier. But our site was funny. It was supposed to be humorous. And so I was always trying to find a way to make those tips and tricks videos funnier. And it was a weird timing because the site shut down. And then I had just made an Apple Switch ad parody video with Gus.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, this can turn into a super long story. But basically, Joel here was the actor in my movie in college. I was a computer science student. I wanted to learn about filmmaking, but I thought, I'm not going to sit through film classes. I'm just going to make a movie. Because by the time I'm done, everything I need to know about filmmaking, I'll know it.
Of course.
Point. Yeah. And this was like at UT right after Robert Rodriguez had married Mariachi.
Okay.
So it was this idea, take $7,000 and set the whole world on fire. So I met Matt and Joel. They were film students. Joel was a theater student at UT. And we made a movie together, a 16-millimeter feature film, 105 minutes. It took us 13 months to make it. And then we went through the process. Chris, you can probably relate to this, that we went through the process of, we have our movie, it's done, now we can get to work. Because we spent a year trying to get people to watch our movie. Like, I always call going to a film festival is like, we're trying to convince 5 people to let us show our movie to 200 people.
Right.
That was that process. And we went through that for a year. I put up this video with him, this Apple Switch ad.
With Gus.
I put that online, and it just, like, people were emailing it to each other. And within 24 hours, Matt in L.A. called me and said, I walked into some guy's office, and he was showing me this video, and it had Gus in it. And it was like, well, I said, I put that up like less than 24 hours ago. I put up 5 o'clock after work. I put that video online. And
what video player were you using at that time?
It was QuickTime.
Yeah, it was like we had to host the video ourselves. You know, it was
Did you have to pay for the bill?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
$15,000 bandwidth bill sometimes.
Oh, God.
It was like the summer of 02, I think.
Yeah.
Or one.
Yeah,
or
it was probably summer of 01.
And that's right around when people were just starting to get DSL. It's like you're just starting to get those like 128K speeds, but it's still not super everywhere yet. It's a little bit, it's more expensive. It still takes a little bit longer. So
And the video codecs were so lousy that a postage stamp size video resolution wise, that was like a minute long, that was like an 80 meg download. And now you can get like full high def with new codecs that are like 17 megs, you know, or 30 megs for a 2 or 3 minute video. So it's like even those things like reduced our biggest costs as the codecs got better. But yeah, when we put the first episode of Red versus Blue up online, 3,000 people watched the first video. And then it got linked on Slashdot and FARC and Penny Arcade linked it. And this is April of 2003.
Wow.
And those sites alone, those are huge. They literally brought down the servers that we had these things hosted. So then it got scattered all over the internet, and people were hosting it in different places. So 3,000 people watched the video before we went down. The next week when I put up the second episode, we had 250,000 people watch that
Holy
one.
Holy shit.
And then the third one, it was 750,000 people. And by the end of the month, we were doing a million per video every time we put one up. And then we started getting bills from our server, our co-location facilities, of just like, oh, you owe us $15,000. So like popularity became this enormous problem for us.
Were you making any money at that point?
No, it didn't exist. Yeah, no. So that's how we built our business models, was like almost out of necessity. And then that necessitated us talking to Microsoft. Luckily, they called us and they said, you know, this thing seems cool and innovative. We don't really understand it, but let's work something out, you know? And at the time, I'm a little bit older. I'm 40. And so this whole process started for me when I was 29. So I had an idea that, like, this is their – this all this was based on Halo. Red versus Blue is a cartoon that we make based on Halo, for those of you listening who aren't familiar with it. It's been running for now – it's going to its 11th season. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the longest-running web series. You know, I had an idea that I'm not going to go in there and tell them which way the wind blows, you know what I mean, or that, like – or go in there and cry fair use or any of that stuff. I went in, like – with a business plan and said, I want to license this and that. And they didn't have a model for that at the time, but they worked with us until they did, you know?
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah. And so it was. We got very fortunate.
They were very forward-looking. We really lucked out. Right place, right time. And I mean, to put things in perspective, you kind of glossed over the fact that you had this capture card that could digitize video. I mean, this was 10 years ago now. I mean, I think that capture card back then was like $1,500.
Exactly. It was $1,500.
And now you can buy them at like Best Buy for like $49.
God,
like,
and I had to have a SCSI 2 hard drive that I think it was like $1,000 for 4 gigs. Like, that's because it was like, it sounded like a plane taking off, this hard drive, when you turned it on, because it had to be super, super fast to capture the video.
Oh, my God.
So it's a lot of stuff has changed over the years. But basically, you know, Rushi started as a we modeled ourselves, our business, a lot after Homestar Runner. We're huge fans of Homestar Runner. I am, at least. And back then, the currency of the internet wasn't advertisements. It was T-shirts. So we started off selling T-shirts that were quotes from the show and just our Rooster Teeth logo. You know, and then evolved into selling DVDs from there. And then we had subscription models with like different layers of like, if you subscribe at this level, we call it sponsorships. Mm-hmm. And this is back in 2003. And it looks a lot like what Kickstarter is today, where it's like, if you contribute this amount, then you get these benefits. And if you contribute this amount, you get this, you know, in different levels. And then, you know, over the years, and then YouTube came along. We were 3 years late getting on YouTube, because we actually looked at it initially as a competitor. I remember a guys we were working with, the guys who make Ask a Ninja.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they Kent Nichols, the guy who...
Kent and Doug.
Yeah. He's the guy who showed me YouTube. I remember it. And I looked at it, and I go, that's garbage. It's never going to take off.
Well, there were some other, you know, people out there doing that other than YouTube at the time, and they didn't, you know.
Well, YouTube was the big one. Yeah. There was no revenue sharing on YouTube.
Well, one of the other entities that was doing that at the time was Google. They had Google Video, which nobody remembers.
Oh, right. No, I do remember that, because I remember when they took it down... Because you used to be able to search Google videos, but I don't remember ever finding anything that relevant on there.
At one point, they announced a deal with ABC to do like online video for ABC's primetime lineup, and then that deal just like got shut down like a week later.
And then they went to YouTube. What do you think about how YouTube has evolved? Like, what do you think about it now?
No, it's crazy. I mean, YouTube's reached that point as a brand where they're like a Kleenex or a Xerox, where the word is the thing, you know?
Yeah.
And even more so, it's like...
I think they call that metonymy.
Is that what they call it?
I believe that's the word.
Oh, nice.
I think. I might be wrong.
Which was a term invented by the Metonymy Corporation. So how ironic is that?
God damn. So meta-metonymy.
Meta-metonymy. But yeah, and now they're even at that level where they've reached verb status, where you're gonna YouTube something. Yeah, where it's like, now it's like, it's how we say we're going to do this, and it just means online video.
Yeah.
And we have a huge presence on YouTube. I think we just put out a big infographic for our 10th anniversary. I think we're now 7th most watched all time, non-music, because the music channels are just like...
You can't... I mean, you can't compete with a billion fucking... Just of the fucking Psy alone...
Right.
Is ridiculous.
1 billion on that one video.
It's up to 1.5.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I mean, we just hit 2 billion views total
people
across all of
watching
our videos.
That.
Yeah, I looked at it the other day out of curiosity. I was like, did it plateau? Like, did people just push it to 1 billion and stop? And it looked just like, holy shit, it might get to 2.
No, god damn it.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. But, I mean, it's like, you know.
We need to get more musical.
Yeah.
You know, his his second video, the Gentleman video, was the most views on a video in a 24-hour period.
Oh, yeah.
It was 38 million. And I think the previous record holder was Kony, which was 30 million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So he beat Kony by 8 million with the Gentleman video.
In 24 hours.
Which, I mean, listen, I'm not...
Kony's working on a follow-up.
He's hard at work right now.
Oh, man.
But that sophomore effort can be tough.
Oh, man.
It's a little bit of a slump.
But the new side video sounds a little more... It does... I mean, I'm not going to make any grand statement here. Sounds a little like Gangnam Style. It says it pretty similar.
Sort of hitting the same...
I mean, you know, look, I'm not... I'm sure it's fine.
Hey.
I'm just saying.
No.
How did Macklemore's second video do? Because Thrift Shop was huge.
Thrift Shop, I thought the second video was really cool.
Yeah, so
it seems like they spent a lot of money making that. It was a lot of locations.
Went to a lot of different places.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, Thrift Shop's, it's almost at 300 million views on
Jesus.
Thrift Shop, you know? And that's, was he from Seattle? Dude from Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. just, that thing just hit big. And clearly, YouTube is the new MTV. You know, I mean,
there's no question.
Like, I think people used to view it as like a place to farm talent, you know, for like the big leagues, quote unquote, you know, for traditional media. But now it's like you don't need to make that jump. You can be fine doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, look at somebody did a Macklemore parody, Thrift Shop parody, and they're at 5 million views. I mean, that's like crazy.
You know? Well, that's the sort of the, you know, all the response videos and the parody videos. It's that, you know, they're all the kind of lampreys on the other underside of the whale that are getting nutrients from that, but it totally works. Like, there are people whose channels subsist on
unrelated videos.
You know, one of my favorite phenomenons on YouTube of all time is the thumbnail that looks pornographic but isn't. It has like 100 million views. Like, look at this video. It's a video of vocal cords. It's got 166 million views.
That's it's a throat pussy.
You could not show that at E3. You'd have to have some guts on there.
Jesus.
Video stroboscopy of the vocal cords looks like a guy
man
on top of it, because that looks like a dude's ass
on top of a vagina.
I mean, the vocal cords,
man,
they're all very pussily presented.
The throat pussy, as it's known in the medical profession.
Yes, yes. Oh my God, that really is. They all have tons.
Because they show up in thumbnails and be like, well, hello. Let me see what this video is about.
Do you think anyone goes through with it? They're like, well, I've committed this far.
It's like, why? They start learning.
Is it a sphincter? It's a pyloric sphincter. So it is a sphincter in the body, but that's just not the one.
Can you imagine? I mean, this conversation 30 years ago, it's like, for the final episode of MASH, do we want to say farewell to the characters, or do we just want to show vocal cords?
Well, that depends. How many people do you want to watch it?
I know, it would be double.
If you want a lot of people to see it,
this year, the Super Bowl has been preempted. By a guy's elbow up close.
revealing footage of Hot Lips Houlihan. And then it's just like, oh, it's her vocal cords.
We're just going to evolve to the point where there's just like 30 thumbnails that are just reused over and over again.
166 million views by accident.
And yet what's going on in my head is like, how can I use this to our advantage? Because it feels like, you know, particularly with YouTube, there is an element, of course, like, yes, if the content is solid, then people will share it, which, of course, is, you know, sharing is required, which makes it a challenging platform because you don't know what people are going to share. But I know that there are also weird little sciencey things you can do, like meta tags and titles and the thumbnail. Mm-hmm. And how do you present that to, you know, it's not gaming the system. It's just intelligent marketing of your
SEO.
Of your thing. Yes, it's good SEO, but that's still a very difficult thing to predict. Do you guys feel like you have a good understanding of that, or does it not? I mean, you have so many subscribers now. Do you feel like that doesn't matter as much, or do you still work on it?
Well, I think it's like anything else in entertainment, and as online video becomes more mature, and especially as it becomes more saturated, it's always like, when I was in college, going back to that Robert Rodriguez story, I read his biography about how he made El Mariachi. I think it's called Rebel Without a Crew. And I read the whole thing. It's like, here's how he made the movie. I got needles stuck in my arm at a pharmaceutical testing company to raise the money. And then I went down to Mexico and shot it. And here's how we shot it. And here's how we did that. And I'm just reading this whole biography going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's like, and then when the movie was done, and then we took it to this festival. Anyway, this guy saw it and it got bought by Miramax. I'm like, wait. That's the part I want to hear. How'd you get that done? And it's just like, it's always in any kind of success story, whether it's even like a vocal cord video, there's always some kind of weird X factor.
Yeah.
That you're never gonna be able to recreate. You sure. can go through all these like self-help books, they always say, or these biographies, it almost seems like there's a formula or a process you can go to, but there's always gonna be this X thing that you're not gonna be able to recreate. Like Kevin yeah. Smith's thing, where one guy saw it at a midnight screening and bought it and, you know, put it out there.
Yeah.
You know, Clerks, that was never more on more than 50 screens.
Really?
At any point in time.
So it was all like home video and word of mouth.
Like Super Troopers or something yeah. like that. Yeah. But everybody, who hasn't seen Clerks, right?
Well, it's that weird sort of that X Factor thing you're talking about. There's some organic element that you can't it's like, you know, like why we can't build a robot or have CG that looks 100%. There's just like this one element that it just, the soul of it just isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you can't control.
And it's like one of those things, like when that comes by for anything, you might not even recognize it. Like that was the big opportunity for this thing or something to take off.
Yeah.
So you can do all those things. Like you can take a viral video. I hate that term. I know you do too. You can try to do all those things to induce virality, but it might not happen.
And then when you chase it, it just looks fucking gross.
Oh, yeah.
It's just when you chase. Yeah, I mean, I've
smacked it. And the audience can tell.
I said this when I hosted the streamies about, like, please don't stop asking for viral videos. Companies, like, you might as well just ask for $1 billion. I want $1 billion.
Right, yeah.
Well, sure. Okay, great. That's awesome. Yes, you want your thing to be successful. Yes, everyone wants that. Fantastic.
Oh, you don't want a failure of a video. Oh, yeah. Okay. God, let me restart this process.
Here's what's frustrating to me about
here's our B package.
This is what's frustrating to me about making YouTube content, but also at the same time, it's weird. I have two points of view on it. On one hand, I'm frustrated by it. On the other hand, I think it's kind of awesome. But I was performing at Penn State, and I asked this girl in the front row. I asked people, like, oh, do you guys have creators? Do you have YouTube channels? This girl goes, yeah, I have a YouTube channel. You know, I have like 500 subscribers. My first video was a video of my friend asking someone to prom, and it got 3 million views. And I was like, Jesus Christ. You know, we fucking reunited the Fraggles and made a Ben Fold video, and that got like 1.5 million.
Right.
Like her friend. And so I'm like, God damn it. And we spent money on that. And so part of me is frustrated, and part of me is like, yeah, but that's fucking awesome. Like, just this girl just put up a thing and 3 million people saw it.
Mm-hmm. You know, my favorite story like that is, I believe, you know, Hannah Hart as
of
well.
Of course, yeah, Kitchen. I love yeah. Hannah.
Brilliant. Unbelievably funny. Her first video she ever put up was not put up by her. That she was a video she made for her friend of,
yeah.
like, her friend had moved away or something, and she made that, and her friend put up the video, and it, like, just launched her career.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. It's serendipity. Awesome.
There's that X factor you're talking yeah. about.
But she was ready. Like, when that came, she worked as a Japanese translator.
I know.
And she was ready. Like, she said, okay, this is an opportunity. I'm going to attack this thing, and I'm going to, you know, and she says, and now I'm an entertainer. Yeah,
and it's the kind of thing you could have missed. Like you said, you know, an opportunity may show up and you may not recognize it.
Right.
It would have been easy to be like, oh, that was like a one-time thing. You know?
Right.
Is there too much noise, do you think? Or do you think it's still...
Well, we're different, and you are too, I think. Like, you put together a production with Ben Fold 5 and the Fragdolls. The Fragdolls. you put that together, and you put a lot of time into that, and you kind of have to realize that if you're going to spend all this time making something and building some kind of narrative, that's incredible, but you're never going to compete with the cat falling off the roof of
never,
the day.
Never,
you know?
Never.
Or the kid who just got out of the dentist, you know?
And it burns, you know, like that, a video like that will burn twice as bright, but it will only burn half as long. Right. Like those, you know, like the guy who happens to catch his cat throwing up and farting at the same time. It's like that might get 100 million views, but that guy, it's not like he's going to have a loyal audience of people that are going to be like, hey, every week I'm going to tune in for this yeah. guy.
It's like the girl you gave the example about, the 3 million view video. She has 500 subscribers. It's
right.
like you have to capture those eyeballs, and then you have to continue to provide regular, compelling content.
It is fast. I mean, like, it's so easy to see why so many big companies fail with YouTube, thinking that it's just, oh, it's like television. It's a visual medium. Like, mm-hmm. no, but it requires... It's not a platform that people just go and let stuff hit them in the face. Like, they have to activate it. Like, they have to seek it out.
Right.
They have to share it with everyone they know. It's a much different – that is a completely different dynamic than other visual media.
And we realize that, too. I mean, you take a look at just the show we make, Red versus Blue. We can talk to her blue in the face. It's the longest running web series. Do you want to know this? Do you know that Reverse Blue is now the longest running sci-fi series in America?
What?
Yeah, we just passed, last season we passed Stargate, which is the longest. So now we're the longest running, because sci-fi shows, you know that story. They get canceled.
Yeah.
You know,
Firefly.
Firefly was 10 episodes and people still talk about it to this day. But it's like, you know, it's the longest running web series. We've worked on it for years. It's 11 years now running, all that. It's one of the biggest machinima series ever, like popularized the art form of machinima. We go in a room and it's like we had to explain to people what it is and how big the audience and all that. But at the same time, we walked in a room and go, Leroy Jenkins. Everybody goes, Leroy Jenkins, which was a machinima video that was just a one-off video that was enormous. And yeah. It's like you just have to understand that some things are broader. You know what I mean? Like you said, they burn brighter. You know?
Yeah.
But it's like, and that video was what, 6 years ago, you know?
Yeah, maybe longer now at this point.
Yeah, and we were like in our third or fourth season by that point, and here's this one video that, like, for whatever reason, everybody identifies with it.
It's always I liken it, as I do most things, because it's a thing that I do the most, but with stand-up, you can try to craft where you want it, the audience to laugh. Like, you can go, this is going to be the part. And then you know, and they don't laugh at that. And then some throwaway part of the joke they fucking go nuts over. And then you're like, what? That wasn't really? I didn't know that. All right. And I sort of feel the same way with YouTube. Sometimes you're like, oh my God, this is gonna fucking, oh, I can't believe how big this is gonna be. Mm-hmm. And then that just something in there misses, but then some other throwaway thing, like, oh, what, that?
Yep. It's weird what people can identify with. And then views are like that too, I think too. If something goes to like 40 million views or 50 million views, a lot of that is just timing, in the sense that it gets linked enough places within a certain window. Yeah. Like if say you got linked on like 10 different sites, if you got linked on those 10 different sites over 10 days, that wouldn't be as good as if you got linked on those 10 sites in 24 hours, where it like becomes like this like critical mass.
Right.
And then it becomes a bigger deal, where it's like it stretches out. There's something to that as well.
As a viewer, I might not be interested in watching it, but if I see it again and again on the same day, I'm like, okay, what the fuck? I have to watch this stupid video.
Yeah.
Like, apparently it's getting linked everywhere.
But I gotta say too, if you get a bunch of, I'm gonna call them YouTubers now, if you get a bunch of YouTubers in the room, you always hear YouTube philosophy, like the philosophy of this stuff, and the more you talk about it, you realize there's just no answer.
This is the thing, yeah, you can get lost in this. Yeah. I mean, you can just get utterly lost in this, and like anytime I've ever like made a video or whatever, I'm just like, I'm just gonna make what I think is funny to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, if I'm hitting where I think it's gonna work, it usually works.
I think that's our big philosophy here, is that we make videos that would make us laugh. That's how we started.
Well, that's our original websites were intended for that.
Right. We make our buddies laugh, and then we have faith that there's enough people like us on the internet that that'll find an audience.
Yeah.
So far, it's worked out. You know, I mean, there's not any videos that we make here that we don't like.
It's funny. It's like a joined consciousness. You know, if you're going through the game that you're playing, it's the one game that you guys are playing that I'm not playing right now. Bioshock 2.
Oh, Bioshock Infinite.
But you're going through and you're playing that game, and unconsciously there's things happening that you're like, well, why is this like that? Why is this like that? You know, everybody who's played that game is going through that same thought process,
sure,
but no one's like sort of talking about it. But it's like, if you find that moment, it's just like, well, I'm just going to talk about what everyone's thinking about. You've hit it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's the audience already knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, it is. It is. There is a little bit of a, oh, you're exposing a truth that I knew on some level, but hadn't really put into words yet.
Yeah, and present it in a funny way. Hopefully it works.
But if you also do like the topical current events kind of thing, then you're just in a race every single week with everybody else doing the same thing.
Yeah, and it's, I kind of don't want to like try and chase Saturday Night Live too much.
Plus also there's no tail on that, you know. Once you get far enough away from current events, it becomes dated.
Yeah.
And you don't have the long-term viewability. You would have something else that's narrative.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at like our channel, we have all these different shows, you know, some of them that have run for years and years, tons and tons of views, but our video with the single most amount of views is a parody we did of an Angry Birds trailer. And to this day, that still gets tons of views. The other thing that's kind of frustrating for a lot of people in starting out, and this noise level that you're talking about, is that views also beget views. When you see a video in the related videos and you see the thumbnails, you say, oh, that one has 150 million views. It looks like vocal cords, but 150 million people watched it. So it's like that becomes its own kind of accreditation.
And because of the sort of upvote nature of the algorithm of YouTube, the more popular it gets, the more visible it's going to be on YouTube. The higher up it's going to be, the higher it's going to rank, because it's not really. I mean, it is just all sort of what's popular sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Like the new pages, the new home pages on YouTube are interesting, but it is a lot of it's just like a mosaic of, you know,
it's like a version of the front page of YouTube now.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Everyone's homepage is a version of the front page, and it's just like vertical and horizontal tiling, and it's just videos everywhere.
Yeah. And I think that some things, they just make more sense in some formats right now. I think things are converging, but if somebody made Game of Thrones and it was the same quality and it was a web series, I don't know as many people would watch it on, you know, the internet.
We just need to find out what the numbers. I know everyone said that House of Cards was tremendously successful for Netflix, but I don't know what the numbers were.
Right.
I'd be interested to find out what
I would too.
Like, what does that mean?
It seems like they're going to keep going with that formula.
Because I think what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, when you think about the most popular television shows in our culture, a lot of them don't really have audiences that are that huge, you know, like.
Right.
Shows like, you know, you think of like...
And the shares are even lower, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Like when you think about,
Lost in its prime, you know, might have been 20 million.
If
maybe at peak.
Well, I'm even thinking of like cable shows like Game of Thrones.
Right.
We think of it as a huge show, you know, but their premiere had like 3 million people.
And they're behind a paygate, essentially.
Right.
Because they're a subscription channel.
Right.
Yeah.
These shows that permeate our culture so much... But it's not like the old days where a television that you would think of as that big, it's like 25 million, you know. Yeah, it really is.
Does MASH still have the record for like the highest ratings ever, the MASH finale?
I don't know.
It was pretty high.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous.
It's going like to be something crazy like that.
I mean, you know, the fucking MTV Movie Awards just did backflips because they had 3.8 million viewers.
It's really weird. And it's like, was like Two and a Half Men has like the most... ratings like in the past 5 years.
I think Big Bang is over them now, isn't it?
Big Bang, I think, is
same dudes, same people making it.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, Chuck Lorre.
Yeah.
And how many? I don't know. I mean, it's probably got, I don't know, 5, 6, 10. I don't know.
Well, I think, I don't know. And it's weird, too, because.
But that's something that I'm not going to watch.
But going back to formats, too, where things are different, I'm totally working from memory here, so these numbers are probably not exactly right. But I remember when How I Met Your Mother signed its syndication deal. It was like some record-setting deal, but they were 41st in the rankings at the time. But now they're in syndication. They're the number one syndicated show. Like that show, like somebody saw that show was a perfect fit for a syndicated show.
It's almost like that's part of the decision making and the model process. It's like, how's this going to live?
The old television, the older television model just doesn't really take into account people's viewing habits, and no one now wants to be told really when they have to watch something, and they don't even understand it a lot of the time.
No.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean I have to? It's so like we were talking earlier about things that are being geo-blocked. Like, the internet has taught me that I should be able to have everything all the time, whenever I want.
On demand, yeah. Do you do much live streaming events?
No, we don't do a lot of live streaming events.
We don't either, because we came up in an internet where it's essentially on demand, that you don't make appointment viewing for the internet. But it just seems like everything is, people really like live now. Our podcast, a portion of it is live.
I'm up for doing it, you know, like I think, okay, well, I just don't think you're going to get the majority of your viewers in the live stream.
Definitely not.
Absolutely not.
You'll get them afterwards.
Yes.
You know, so I totally would do a live stream thing and then just put it up later, you know, put it up immediately afterwards, mm-hmm. and then just let people find it. But
that's the way to do it. I mean, you're right. It's a fraction of a percent who actually show up for the live stream. But I think they like the interaction.
Yeah.
Is what, you know, they're hoping to get.
I would do it if it were super interactive and it were sort of like a Google Hangout or something where you can interact with people and have them like a call-in type of a thing. Mm-hmm. Then it would make a lot of sense to me. Otherwise, I don't think just streaming something live for the sake of streaming live really... I think people would be like, well, who gives a shit, you know?
Yeah. The nice thing is a lot of people who work in live streaming get very excited about much lower numbers.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they really do. It's like, they're like, this is tremendous. Like, what, really? Okay, that's great, you know? And it's like, a lot of times, it's like, they're not numbers that we're used to. I mean, we're used to, like you said, the catalog on-demand numbers. Over the course of a week, you know, a million people show up to watch it. But for live stream, if 50,000 people watch something, it's like, people go crazy.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's why that Red Bull, that Felix Baumgartner thing, would have, like, there was like 7 million people watching the live stream of him jump out of that capsule.
Also, do you know what, like, you know what that beat? What was the all-time biggest stream of all time before that?
No.
Birds hatching. It was eggs.
They're just waiting for the second step in the process of what happens after.
Yeah, they could have theoretically fallen out of the nest. It could have been like a trial run.
Are you serious? Birds hatching?
Yeah, I think there were eagles.
Yeah, it was an eagle cam. I remember that.
Eagle cam.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, that's cool, but the guy jumping from space, I like that that's number one.
Yeah, if you go through like the YouTube live list, it's a lot of like puppy cam, you know, kitten cam. It's a lot of stuff like that. Like, I want to watch rookie puppies on demand.
Basically, I think what most people in the world want is just a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week puppy bowl. I think that's just what people, that's ultimately what they want. They just... And maybe it's because they feel like the world's a horrible place and they need to see things like that to make them happy. But I feel like Puppy Bowl is the soul of what humanity really wants.
After seeing all those gut-covered tits in video games, like, I just want to see a puppy now. Yeah. That Murder Tits episode was too intense. I got to watch, rinse it off, clean my palate.
You need a palate cleanser. Yeah, you need a Puppy Bowl palate cleanser.
Oddly enough, they had the CEO of Animal Planet on, like Bloomberg, yesterday, and I was listening to her, and man, they were pushing the Puppy Bowl. They were talking, our numbers are getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
They don't have to push Puppy Bowl.
Next year, we're going to show puppies.
They revolutionize Puppy Bowl. They'll have that Matrix style camera in the Puppy Bowl.
No,
but I think the hardest thing for people starting out and putting videos up and kind of making traction in the space is that noise that you talked about, Chris.
Yeah.
The scariest stat, and it's probably out of date now, is one that YouTube themselves put out, which is that every minute that goes by, 72 hours of footage are uploaded to YouTube.
Yeah.
They publish that on their blog. It's like, so if you want to watch every video on YouTube, you would fall 3 days behind every minute you try to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible.
It's insane. Yeah.
It's impossible.
So that's this rising noise floor coming from essentially, you know, everybody. But then I hate to even call it above or below, but like then you have all these networks now that are like rushing into the digital space and they're just like making noise from an entirely different direction, you know, with like bringing shows and making additional content. That's what the last writer's strike was all about, was the, you know, the coming into the digital space for the big studios and networks. So, yeah, it's getting more and more crowded all the time.
And I don't know if there's even, you know, I'm not even really sure if there is any advice you can give people other than, well, make good content and figure out who your audience is and figure out how to...
And then when something hits.
Get it to those audiences, get it to those blogs, you know. I don't really know what the trick is.
I can't say you nailed it though. Something we took us a long time to discover, which was we always got super excited about traditional media opportunities. Like we went on TRL on MTV, and man, you remember that preparing for that?
Oh yeah, that was crazy.
Like, we hired new servers in different cities to host the videos. It's like, wow, MTV's Total Request Live. This is basically their new show, live. It's going to be enormous. This is our audience. This is demographic, all that other stuff.
It's like the peak of TRL. I mean, this is like when early on for us.
Like 2005 or 2006
and
for
it
us.
And didn't...
I mean, you wouldn't even think we had been on a show that day. Nothing. But...
It was maybe a 1% traffic increase. Maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. And that was like, because people aren't going to go, like, I'm watching something on TV to go to the internet to do it. You know what I mean? But... We put out a video for Immersion with the car in it. We got linked on a car blog. What's the car blog?
Jalopnik. Yeah.
Enormous.
That's in the Gawker family.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And it was like, and so those blogs are, like getting on a blog or something like that is way bigger than getting a newspaper article.
Yeah, it's easier to click through. You know, you're in the ecosystem. You're on your computer. Click, click, click. Like you just, it's your natural browsing progression. It's not like... I'm going to put the remote down. I'm going to get my computer.
If you're in the Gawker, if you pop on Laughing Squid or Boing Boing or somehow make...
Or Deadspin. Like
or
something,
Reddit.
Something that's outside
Reddit.
Of your normal audience, really.
Yeah.
You know? Like we got on Deadspin for an EA Sports thing we did. And that was that was huge traffic for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you tend to get excited about like Sports Illustrated doing an interview with you or The Wall Street Journal or TRL, but those aren't necessarily, that doesn't seem to matter that much anymore.
No, not really. Different audiences, different type of, a different form of engagement, and it's a different story. Yeah. People on the internet, you're constantly just tripping over stuff. You just constantly have to trip over and then hope that if you're making something that people fall down that hole and then, you know, have to share it with everyone. Well, this was our hour. This was really fun.
Man, I can't believe it's over.
Not only was this fun, but I feel like every time I'm in Texas, I want to come do a podcast with you guys.
We learned something too.
I would love to have you guys just sort of be like recurring. I'll just come hang out because I feel like I feel like we could just riff on dumb show ideas for an hour.
Absolutely. Let's
do it. Absolutely.
And we didn't even get back to the one thing that I really, my favorite thing we talked about last time.
Unfamiliar
cum? Well, no, which was.
Why did I say unfamiliar cum?
It was like, you know, you've hit your low in life when you're covered in unfamiliar cum.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
<That's laughs> you've hit bottom.
That's now right. I want to know how we got to that. How did we get there? No, my favorite thing we talked about last time was the Australian girl, which I'm a little upset that we brought her up this time because I always had this kind of vision in the back of my head that she told all of her friends that I was on this. They talked to me nonstop during this podcast. God. And then that podcast never came out. Yeah. And her friends are like, she's crazy.
This is just, she always does this.
She was really drunk.
Oh, remember when you were going to be on SNL? Yeah. No, but I really ran into that person.
You see, that happened to me where I had I was on a soap opera for a little while and I had like a little part or whatever and I ran into an ex-girlfriend and I knew my thing was going to air like the next day. I'm like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And they cut my part.
Oh!
And they cut my part.
Now just like she did.
She
cut you out.
Now I'm just like an asshole.
You were on the cutting room floor of our relationship too,
oh,
Joel.
God. God, it was awful.
That's such a bummer too, because you always want to, you know, to an ex, you want to appear like
you've done
things
something
are great.
With your yeah. life.
I'm not saying that not being with you anymore has elevated my status in life, but there is an interesting data point that would suggest a correlation.
Yeah.
And just here it is.
And now I'm just an asshole who made up a story about being on a soap opera.
What soap opera?
Passions. It was a long time ago.
That really was a long time ago.
Yeah. It was the soap opera with a witch.
With a witch?
Yeah. It had a lot of stuff going on there. A lot of active.
But I was upset that we didn't get to talk about Australia's fascination with red party cups, which I guess we'll have to get to next time.
That's right. She didn't understand why everyone had the red solo cups.
Yeah, I heard she was from Australia, and I said, Chris, I want to test something on you here. I said, there's this weird thing, and she's going to verify it because she'll freak out when she hears it. I go, Australians are fascinated by the fact that they think Americans all drink out of red cups. And she goes, what's with the red? She freaked out as soon as she heard
she
it.
She flipped out. She may have been a little drunk.
So you could tour Australia with just that material.
Did you know in Australia they have bars where they have red cups? That's like their thing. And like that's the whole gimmick for the bar is just red like cups. In America. You
is
go,
that an America bar?
This is like subversive marketing for like the red cup company. It's just like genius.
Solo cups is just, seriously like putting a person in their
that's where they drink all their Fosters.
No, they don't.
We made that up. America, we made that up.
That'd be awesome if you went to that bar and you had to drink Foster's because that's what everyone thinks Australians drink.
You kind of be really irritated as a culture when another country is like, this is what these guys do. And you're like, that's not at all. You went to other countries and they're like, you know, they just pick some random thing that and they say everyone does that.
They make you eat it when you show up. They make it for you.
Yeah. Bison melts. Everyone in America has them. No, we don't. Some people eat bison, but it's not a thing.
You're from America. Didn't you cross the Great Plains?
That's where you would have your bison melts. Ah, those bison melters just always shoving bison melts into their maws.
I kind of want one now.
All right, we'll go get bison melts. I'm sure there's a fucking bison melt food truck in Austin.
Let's do it. I'm sure there is.
There's
sure
a trailer there with bison melts.
It's going to be awesome.
I fucking went to the Gordo's Donut trailer yesterday.
Did you? It's a treat. They have like club sandwiches.
For those who don't know, they take like a sugary donut and they slice it in half and then put a piece of fried freaking chicken in the middle of it.
They'll do that.
The mother clucker.
Yeah, it's a mother clucker. We had ours had like basically cooked bananas and on a donut, and there was some other shit, and I think some maple syrup. But three bites, and we cut it in half and just gave it to some other people. We're like, we can't finish that.
And those people are dead now.
Yeah, they're not alive
that
anymore.
Was the first time in my life I saw a piece of food and just got angry.
Yeah,
about it. I was like, this.
You all. It's blasphemy. You all are. It's delicious.
Oh. It's so good. But you also look at their offerings, like the stuff and all the things they pile, like and then caramel with chocolate and then sprinkle, and then you just look at the trailer and you go, fuck you. Fuck you. How fucking dare you combine these things?
And they go, you're going to eat it anyway.
And you do. And it's fucking delicious. But thank you so much for coming on, you guys. Rooster Teeth. Any iteration of Rooster Teeth. YouTube, website, Rooster Teeth podcast.
Daft Punk impersonators.
Daft Punk the series.
Coming soon near you.
Coming soon to a theater. Okay, laptop's like a portable theater. If you want to, you know. It's coming to a portable theater near you like a laptop. Thanks for being here, you guys.
All right.
In your own
you.
Studio.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris.
It's quite a setup here.
What a familiar episode you have.
Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.